Morning Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Wow. Kind today. Way more people, I guess most people just choosing not to respond. And then the ones that did, way majority. What is it, they say ratio?
Yeah.
On the cricket thing.
Guy said
they offer lines for cricket on DraftKings. I actually bet on the Rajasthan Royals last week, and they got the win for me. I had a way to
there
back a winner, pal. Go with the pink, the Royals.
Do they have a nickname? Like the
Royals,
RRs?
That is their nickname, Rajasthan Royals.
No, I know, but I mean, you know, like the Rangers.
New York Knicks. Knicks would be their nickname, Rajasthan Royals. Gotcha, playing gotcha. I'm going to do the whole rest of the show.
Just say it.
You're just saying.
You know, there's the rags for the Rangers.
I don't think.
Do they have a nickname like the Roys or the RRs or the Pinkies or something? I don't know.
I don't believe they do, actually. I think Royals is enough.
The Stinky Pinks.
They have, each team has three cheerleaders.
You said that in my ear, didn't you?
No, the Stinky Pinks.
I did not say that over air. I didn't think you're going to repeat it.
I know what you're saying. I get it. No, you didn't get me. I got it. I thought it was...
No, I know.
I didn't think Nick was going to say it over air.
He said it on the air, then I realized he said that in my ear, and I said it on the air.
Yeah, you're like UB Brown, who answered the producer on the air in his first game.
Oops.
I knew where you were going with that. Calm down. But that is not their nickname, and nobody's going to besmirch my Royals, so just watch it.
Sorry.
Yes. Guy said, they offer lines for cricket on DraftKings. I actually bet on the Royals last week, and they got a win for me. So that answers your question. Tulio asked about, can you bet on it? You can also bet. They have player props, too, like they do in, you know, American sports, like how many runs a guy going to score.
See, that's the thing. I would not get that deep.
Yeah. I don't know enough about it.
It's very difficult. Yeah. Like Josh Butler, who went for 106 last night, the game they played last week, they pulled out of the fire, he had 13. He was out like in no time.
Is he like the Adam Dunn of cricket? Like it's a home run?
No, he's
nothing?
Just usually great. But they got him out.
This guy
came up. He's a West Indian player, and he stepped up. He's one of the lower batters in the order, and he started doing that. They would look like they were going to lose again, and all of a sudden he just, bam! He's just hitting bombs, and he pulled it out for them. That guy came up last night, and they got him out on like two pitches.
Really?
Yeah. So you don't know. Don't know. It's
but,
very,
then, but like the game hasn't like and we got to get Eric Crawford on because
yes.
He's got a heart out of 120. But like does
oh my God! Thank God that's I didn't think that's what you said.
What do you think I said?
Play,
oh God! Really?
Play it back in your head.
Oh God! All right, I got to step away. No, seriously, I'm going to go record a spot while you're interviewing Eric.
Did you start to say? You were going to say something before we got to get Eric.
No, I was just going to say, like, has cricket gone the way of baseball where there's, like, no actual
home run,
that's a strikeout?
That's right. No. The strategy is very fascinating. In T20 especially. I don't know the test matches well enough. There's strategy in that, too, but I don't have the patience. I'm not interested. Play 5 days. Leave me alone. But these games are fantastic.
Like, they're still base hits is what I'm saying. It hasn't turned into
and the fielding
exit velocity.
You see the fielding plays these guys make with no gloves. It's amazing. It's very, very – it's damned entertaining. And I'm going to New York to see it, baby. Baby.
Nice. I'm jealous. I legitimately am jealous.
And now Eric Crawford joins us. Eric, what's the strangest sport you've seen that you watched and then said, you know what, that was pretty entertaining?
Well, yeah, I've seen some cricket. It's funny, Louisville was playing Boston College on the road in a football game. It's like Lamar Jackson's one of his last season, maybe, or next to last. And he'd gotten done running all over Boston College and passing all over them. And I'm up in the press box. It's an empty stadium anyway, even during the game. But after the game, these guys come out and they start playing cricket on the football field after the football game. And I start getting, I'm like just kind of mesmerized just watching them. So I sat there a good 45 minutes just watching the cricket match after the football game.
What are they? Do they have grass up there or do they have artificial surface?
No, it was grass.
Wow.
It was grass. And it wasn't like anything organized. It was just some guys
coming
to play cricket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They play two places here. They play on River Road in that little park, whatever that's called there. You'll see them on weekends. I don't know if that's formal. I can't tell. But they play in Prospect at this park. I didn't even know existed. It's down, also by off River Road, and that's formal. They have a league. They're in a league in his uniforms, and it, they're really good. And they this field is immaculate. And I've gone to watch them just once. I just discovered it, but I'm going to watch this spring and summer when they play. They play usually Saturdays and Sundays, and they're very friendly. If you ask them, they'll be happy to answer questions. I mean, they're very you know, they understand. It's not exactly they're packing the place with fans. There's hardly anybody watching, but I would watch. It's damned entertaining. So there you go. So cricket's very good. I like the offbeat games. We get, when I was at ESPN, Jay Reynolds, who's the overnight anchor, and I, for some, we were ahead of the curve. You know what we got into? Curling. Oh, nice. The Scots champion, whatever it's called, is a championship in Canada, which is like a big thing. You know, curling's big in Canada. And since we were on overnight, it was always on there, and we started to follow it. Plus, if I may be frank, some of the women in curling. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the woman who won, who was the skip on her team, well, this could have been borderline stalking, but I felt pretty safe because she was like in British Columbia and we were in Bristol, Connecticut. And so we had her on. She won. We had her on.
Nice.
Yeah, she came on. She was great, like all Canadians. So anyway, that's not why the people had us have you join us. It was to talk about what has been going on locally. So what are your first impressions of Mark Pope? And don't say I don't do impressions.
Well, you know, it's all good until, you know, you got to see the recruiting, got to see the games. I was just blown away by that event they had Sunday. I went and figured, well, that's 6,000 or 8,000. They'll configure the arena, you know, so it looks good or whatever. And I didn't feel – felt kind of bad afterward that the thing was packed and they turned away thousands. And I felt bad until I heard Jeff Shepard say, yeah, I was trying to figure out how they were going to make this look like a big crowd. He said it turns out they didn't have to worry about it. So I think it just kind of shows that there was more of a hunger to get back to what Mark Pope represents. My only question is, can you go back there in college basketball?
Yeah, no.
Because college basketball is not going to be what it was. It's not ever going to be that again. So, but we'll see. I like what he'll do. He'll go into the portal. The big thing with him and Kelsey, it used to be recruiting was just about getting players. Now it's about building a team. And you got to get all your parts almost every year. And you got to be pretty intelligent to make that happen. It seems like that's the kind of guy Mark is, so we'll see what kind of success he has.
Yeah, I said that, and I was afraid, you know, here we go, the guy can text from a guy. You always have to point out the negative. I'm not trying to point out the negative. I just, when I heard, I guess it was Mitch say, you know, we're going to get back to where we were or something, I was like, well, no. I mean, the NIT is not going back to play 32 teams in Madison Square Garden again. That ship has sailed. The ship has sailed for the kind of dominance that you saw in college basketball. Now, it doesn't mean Kentucky can't once again be one of the powers and one of the blue bloods, but the definition of that is going to be, just in my humble opinion, radically different from you know, what it was years ago. And you kind of said the same thing. It's just the game's not going to work that way with the portal. You may have pick a 3-year period, 2026, 2027, 2028. Your roster may be completely different all 3 years. So how can you project that you're going to be as good 1 year as you were the last?
Yeah, nobody is. I mean, except UConn, which, you know, and my thing was, yeah, I mean, give Dan Hurley a call. He wasn't coming here. Why would you? I mean, why do you win two championships somewhere and then leave for another college? That does never happen. But my thing for not just Kentucky, but everybody, better look at what UConn is doing, not just in the last couple of years, but over the last 25. They've won more than anybody. In March, what have they done? You know, what are they doing well to, you know, keep a high level of performance over different coaches in different times and see if there's something you can learn from that.
Yeah, I'm talking to Eric Crawford here. We didn't bring this up yet. This is one of my topics for the day. So I just wanted to see. I'm not as well versed in this as I should be, so forgive me if I'm putting you on the spot, because maybe you're not either. But Nick retweeted this. This is what has been projected. I'm not sure who's projecting it, and I'm not sure, you know, what the next step would be. But have you seen this? The proposed Super League divisions. We talked about this when we were in Phoenix. That's the first I got wind of it. Mike Golda came on our show and told me about it. There's supposed to be seven 10-team divisions, and then the Under League, which are another group of teams that I guess can be relegated. They can be move in and out of this. So it makes 80 teams over, but the 10 teams would rotate in that Under League. And it is ostensibly by geography. And some of them do carry some traditional rivalries, and some really don't. Louisville's in a Midwest division with none of their ACC compatriots. It's about some other teams that were historic rivals, Cincinnati and so on. But did you see this, and what do you think of it, or do you think that this or a variation of it is the way to go?
Well, I think it's what it would look like if, like, a big private money firm came in and was able to take things over and kind of redraw. But that's not going to happen. Nobody is going to just break up the SEC. They're not going to break up the Big Ten. Now, pieces may break off, or the SEC may make itself smaller again one day, but nobody's going to come in and take them over, mainly because their brands are too strong. I mean, the Southeastern Conference is a brand. You're not gonna fold it into something else and not maintain the Southeastern Conference. And you're not gonna do the same with the Big Ten. And pretty soon, that's gonna be, you know, those two leagues together will be half of your 80 teams. So that, you know, but they're not going anywhere as entities. So what we might see is, like, the other conferences, just to get a position of strength, wind up getting taken over or bought out by a private equity group or somebody with a ton of money, and they put together their own conference, and it competes with the others, and then, you know, there's you see that. But I don't think that 80 team deal, I can't see the SEC signing off on that or the Big Ten. So I would think that's a dead idea even before it starts. But it's interesting to look at.
Here's what I think may not be a dead issue, though, because by acknowledging this, at least, some people in positions of power are finally seemingly coming to grips with the fact that, because this is largely because of football. And my understanding is that if this came to pass, you could go back, if you want to call it that, to the traditional leagues for all the other sports. You know, you could go back to Pac-12 for basketball and baseball, and the ACC for basketball and baseball and women's volleyball and everything else. And this is just driven by the football bus. I'm a big fan of that. Football should go on their merry way and leave everybody else alone. That, to me, is the most significant aspect of this. Do you think that has some legs?
It does, but, you know, football also could go its own way, and I think everybody would be happy to see that, but it, the money can't just go its own way, so because that money is funding all these other sports in a large part. So, yeah, I'd like to see that happen, and I think it could happen and will in some way, shape, or form, you know, in the next 10 years, I would think, but how it looks for everything else, how everything else gets split back up, you know, in the wake of that, will be interesting. And how the money works is always the, you know, the devil and the devilish detail. And yeah, that I'm not sure of at this point.
Let me ask you about this. You've covered the women here for a long time. Women's basketball here, very popular. Very, very happy about the fact that the women's sports get great support here. Women's volleyball gets great support. I got to admit, I was somewhat dumbfounded at this, that Caitlin Clark, and I realize we're talking about her a lot, but hey, she is the new face of women's basketball, whether you or I like it or not. And based on the WNBA's rookie scale for draft picks, she's going to make, I'm stunned by this, $338,000 over 4 years. She's going to get $76,000 her first year, which would be this year, $78,000 next year, $85,000 the year after that, and an option year of $97,000 the fourth. If you add all that up, it comes out to exactly $338,056. I'm not suggesting that the demand is there to pay. I'm not just about, well, if men get paid this, women should get paid this, or, you know, basketball gets paid this, so soccer should get paid. It doesn't work that way. But I thought one of the reasons that the WNBA came about is because David Stern saw a real opportunity to for them to really push women's basketball, and they were going to try and make it a big league sport. I mean, it had kind of run, I guess there was a women's league independent, for, and they existed simultaneous with the WNBA for a very short while. And when they came in, they were going to try and throw some of their heft behind it. That doesn't sound like throwing much heft behind it. A lot of the teams are still flying commercial. That's I saw $338,000. I assumed it was for 1 year. That's the total over 4 years. She's probably making way. She definitely is making way more than that for her NIL deal at Iowa. So, I mean, how do you feel? What was your reaction when you saw that?
Well, we've known what the WNBA salary structure is, and it's not much. That's why I was surprised when she went. But when I saw her go, and Cameron Brink go, who's also worked, and Angel Reese and all these others, I think that this draft class is important. They're not going to make the money, in salary.
Right.
They're going to make a lot of money in endorsements. They're going to be some of the bigger endorsements in pro sports, probably, each of those. And certainly Caitlin Clark already. She's making millions. And I would assume she's done the math and is going to make more as a rookie in the WNBA than she was at Iowa. But the bet is, with all of these, is that they can put more butts in seats, and they can deliver more TV audience. And if you do that, the WNBA franchises start to make more money, and that allows salaries to go up, and it starts an upward swing for this league. And that's the bet, and that's what it's going to be very intriguing to see. We know they're going to sell out games in Indianapolis for Caitlin Clark, and they're probably going to sell them out wherever she goes. So if that happens, it's a huge development for the WNBA, and they can use that and build off it. There are other generational players coming right along behind her in college basketball that are going to be, really good. The player, Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame, and Juju Watkins at USC, and some others are big time, and they're going to have their own followings, and the league can start branching off and use some of this popularity of the college game. But somebody has to be the trailblazers, and I doubt if there's been inclusion. I'd be interested to know if this group of players kind of got together and said, we're all going now. Mm. I don't know, because this group really has a chance to push the WNBA forward, I think.
I agree.
And maybe that'll happen. And if that does, then this will be something that starts to salaries will start to go upward the way they should.
I get what you're saying. I'm not here to argue with you, but it's just like, if that argument is true, and I think it is, I think Caitlin Clark, she just hosted Saturday Night Live. It's her people, her agents, obviously told her, look, this is what they're going to pay you, but this is, pin money. The real money will come from these endorsements, which will be lined up out the door. Why then did they give Victor Wembanyama $55 million? He certainly could have an opportunity for every endorsement as much as she does, but they don't count that in the NBA. They just give them the salary outright, and that's what do you make of that?
It's what the league is. Yeah, it's what the media deal is, and what the attendance is, and the WNBA just has not resonated. It has not caught on in the public yet, and that's what it's got a chance now. Caitlin Clark, and it's had great players. I mean, there's no question, but the thing is, you take that college jersey and put a different jersey on them, and they're not as marketable. So maybe that changes things for the WNBA, because a change is needed. It's not a, it's not, it hasn't been doing great numbers at anything. And we'll see if this will help it to be able to do that.
We shall see going forward. Did you see, you don't pay huge attention to the NBA, but you like sports. I was celebrating the NBA's revamped playoff structure. I kind of like it. How much are you familiar with it? What do you think of it?
No, yeah, I like it. The one and done to start, that kind of gives you a little excitement at the beginning. And there's something at stake, and I like it. It needed something like that, I thought. And it got it. So it gives you a reason to watch these games. They're something a little bit different. And I didn't even mind the in-season tournament and all that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I like that.
I think all that stuff helps, to be honest.
Yeah, I think they got to go. You know, you got to think outside the box a little bit. I mean, 82 games. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why we. I do know why. That's how they pay the bills. The old saying was, the regular season is for the players, and the playoffs are for the owners. So those 82 games, 41 home games, that's where they got to make hay while the sun shines. Not only the gate receipts, but all those televised events, the TV contract. So I get all that, but I do wonder: do we really need to play as much as we play? Like baseball used to play. Because there's nothing else to do. I mean, that's really the reality. In the summer, there's nothing else to do. So they played 154 games because people would get out and they'd go and cost them $2 to get in, if that. And they'd go watch a baseball game and drink some beer and have a hot dog and then go about their business. But, now we have air conditioning.
So, yeah.
It's different.
I'm amazed at the number of things in life and in the world that are the way they are because that's how they were set up from the start. Because that fixed the pattern, that fit the pattern of life in the 1920s and 30s, so that's what we're playing today. And, it's like health, the way we do health insurance, there were salary freezes during World War II, they couldn't offer more money, so they had to figure out ways to get people to come work for them. And they're like, well, let's throw in some health insurance on it. So your health insurance has forevermore in this country been tied to your work, your job, instead of just being health insurance. And that's how that started. It was completely by accident, but that's how we do it now.
Yep.
That's how sports is a lot of ways, and I'm not against redoing things as needed to fit the times that we're in.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, it was great to catch up with you. We'll talk again soon. We appreciate you, and you be well. Thanks again.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, Eric Crawford. No, he's good. He's good at he's a good writer. Yeah.
Julian. I got confused when he started talking about when he was like, yeah, I was up at Boston College during a Louisville game. And I was like, he went to a cricket University of Louisville Boston College game? And then he went on with the story.
That would be damned entertaining. Yeah. Unusual intercollegiate sports teams. When I was in college, this actually was a thing. I don't know. Maybe it still is. I've grown out of touch with it a little bit, even though I adore pinball. Colleges had pinball teams. Yeah. I mean, it's like a club thing.
Our high school had cornhole.
A cornhole team?
Yeah.
All right, that makes
I don't know how we did it with Connecticut, because from what I've learned, it's more of a Midwest thing.
Yeah, it's not as big. It's got big everywhere though now. But yeah, it is much. It started in Ohio, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's where it got its birth. Its birth.
Do you know what they call it in Illinois?
Bags.
Yeah. It got me really confused when I first got here.
Only because the only reason I know that, there used to be, there is an arcade game. It's called Bags, and you play, like that ball thing that it's a number of games have used that. The what's that famous golf game that they play, Golden Tee? Golden Tee has the ball, call that thing, but that ball where you slide it and it makes your shot. They had that in Bags. You did the same thing. You did it and you throw the bag and the other guy. I'd never heard that before, but I thought the arcade people just didn't want to say cornhole because that has some connotations, so they said we'll just call Bags, but I realized that's what it's called there. Yeah, that's always a fun thing, what things are called in different parts of the country. The most common ones are, if you go to the grocery store and they ask you, do you want a sack, do you want that one instead of a bag, a sack. Soda's got a million different names. Pop, some places all soda's Coke.
Yeah, no, I think it's some parts here in Kentucky, because I had a coworker when I was working for the Bats.
Want an orange Coke.
And she goes, I was like, oh, do you want anything to drink? She's like, Coke, Sprite. And I was like, yeah, I know Sprite's owned by Coke. But
you want to mix them?
What? And she's like, no. And I was like, why'd you say that? She's like, that's what we call pop. And I was like, you mean soda. Because
right.
Then,
soda, pop.
Then we got an all confused.
The better one, the best one perhaps, is sandwiches. Like when I went to college, there was a store called Greater Grinders. I'd never heard of a sub called a Grinders. I know what that was. I thought it was like a quasi-porn place. I don't know what that was. But Greater Grinders, and then there's Subs, and then there's Heroes, which is what New York, that's a Northeast thing. And
Hoagies,
that's another big one. Yeah, so I don't wonder why that is. Subs makes sense, though, because for the people who don't know, used to be a long, like a sandwich that you'd get at Subway. I mean, a long oval kind of sandwich, and then they would take a green olive with a pimento and put it on a toothpick and stick it in the top, and it looked like a periscope. That's how it. There you go. Now
that makes sense.
We want to know Wednesday. What is today?
Wednesday.
Yeah, we want to know Wednesday. That's how it got the name Sub, because it looked like a...
Wow.
It looked like
I never knew that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that, Tulio. You stay here, you learn absolutely useless things.
But they're fun facts.
Yeah, and a friend who said, you know, you have a lot of knowledge that you cannot monetize. I can't argue that. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll have more. But first, I will tell you about this. I'll tell you that tonight, the Hawks and the Bulls have an elimination game, 9 o'clock on ESPN 680, 105.7 and 93.9 The Ville. Always entertaining right out of the chute. You got games for elimination in the postseason in the NBA. Louisville Sports Live comes your way at 7 o'clock on 93.9 The Ville tonight. Play-by-play rolls on. U of L's spring football game is Friday at 6:30, and then the Reds versus the Angels at 7 o'clock. Saturday, we got some soccer and some baseball. Lou City at Loudoun United, 3:45. University of Louisville takes on Miami at 5:50, and then the Reds and the Angels at 6:10. Checks your stations to see what's on what between 680, 93.9, and 105.7. Sunday, Louisville concludes their series at Miami, 12:50. Reds and Angels at 1:10, and then the Braves and Rangers, the national ESPN broadcast, at 6 o'clock on 105 on all the stations. All of our sticks here have the national broadcast of the Braves and the Rangers. Other programming notes, Chess Trap Soccer City, that comes your way at 6 o'clock on Thursday. Friday, Inside Churchill Downs at 6 p.m. Saturday is Down the Stretch at 9 a.m., and then the Victory Formation Sports Show with Jeff Leitze, 10 to 11. And then Sunday, the Sunday Morning Hangover with Curran and Baker. The Curran and Baker Show on 680, 105.7. So there you go. That's upcoming programming coming your way here on ESPN 680, 105.7. Stay with us. We'll take a break. More to come. ESPN 680, 105.7.
Show with Bob Valvano is now right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
My bad, Bob's chewing on stuff. No, we'll be back. There you go.
I just had to get a swig there, so I'm just coughing on the air with our friend Uncle Paulie, Paul Biancardi. Paisan, how are you, brother?
I'm good, Bobby V. How are you?
What? You know, I was talking about earlier, I was trying to come up with some oddball analogies. I said, I think recruiting for certain places, and certainly in our backyard here with Kentucky and Louisville, the difference now is in the past, it was kind of like furnishing an existing house. You know, you looked at your house, you say, well, we need a nice piece for the power forward room, or I'm looking for a little something for the shooting guard area. But you didn't build it from scratch. Now, it's like you're building a house. Like, you got to call a contractor every day. Like, when's the plumbing going to be in? Because they literally, these places have no players. I mean, they start from scratch. I realize that's the extreme because we're here with two new coaches. But how much of that analogy is accurate almost across the board? I don't mean to minimize, like, what you're doing or the people that are still looking at the high school, outstanding high school players. But how do you integrate the two effectively, Paul? What do you think?
Well, first of all, when you take over a job, it's the hardest thing right now, college basketball. Same thing with college football. So when you come in, most of the team just puts their name in the portal. Whether they're happy there or not, they just do that.
Right.
It's like the thing to do right now, because people, whether it's their parents, their club coach, their high school coach, in some cases, some kind of NIL agent, then go in the portal and see what you can get. You have a brand new coach. You don't know who the coach is yet. So go ahead and do that. So now the new coach comes in. He has to try to retain the players that went in the portal. He's got to try to find new players in the portal. And maybe there's some high school players that are changing their mind because of the coaching changes. It's a very difficult bouncing ball to follow right now. So when you, it's almost like when coaches got the job during COVID. Right, they couldn't go out and recruit. They couldn't go out and evaluate. Everything was done through Zoom. Okay, that was really hard.
Right,
and now it's exploding because of the fact that kids can transfer and play right away. So it's almost impossible to keep up with every transfer and every kid coming back, what high school kid's going to decommit, and then what high school kids are still out there. And I was just thinking about this before I got on the phone with you, Bob. At this time of the year, maybe 5-6 years ago, guys were looking for 2, maybe 3 players. Now they only have 2 or 3 players left in their program.
Exactly.
I was thinking about that, and I said, wow. And now I'm starting to go out, you know, this week to look at the next wave of players. Well, the college coaches aren't even allowed out in April. They don't want to be out because they want to be home to see who's going to lead their program and then what transfers are out there, because the portal window closes, thank God, May 1st. That was a good stipulation they put in.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I said I think I'd be comfortable recruiting now, because I was at a place, the only Division I place I was the head coach at St. Francis, we had such a tiny, tiny recruiting budget that if we went out and spent a lot of it in the fall, very often we earmarked it for this kid, that kid, that kid. And then when the spring came, quite honestly, the bigger boys came in and they were taking, you know, they would say, all right, they didn't get a guy they really wanted up front, so they went to their backups and this kid was on their backup list. And frankly, very often they would go there. They would rather play in the Big East than the Northeast Conference or whatever it may have been. So I was like, well, now we have no money and no players. So frankly, we used to kind of sit out until like the spring, and then we would just go crazy on, you know, whatever kids were still left hanging in there. I mean, there was no other way to do it. We had to go late, because if not, we ran out of money. And so we did all of our recruiting late. And so now I think I'd like this portal thing. I think it's like getting the mail order catalog. Let's see who's available here in the spring catalog. Because, I mean, fans love to talk about
it. You know what it is, Bob? Excuse me. It's ordering online with Amazon.
That's a good point. That's true. I'm gonna. Hey guys,
let me open up the computer. What's on Amazon? Yep, that'll be delivered by tomorrow.
I'm gonna order a power forward today. You guys want anything while I'm in here? Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. So it's going to be tough. But I mean, to that end, get your opinion, because we're all just speculating. None of us know. But I brought it up because I understand fans. It was more of a pep rally than a press conference when Mark Pope was introduced, and Mitch Barnhart said, "I want to see us get back to, you know, the days, and we're going to get back to the days," something along the lines of getting back to some days. And I'm saying, I'm not trying to brain on his parade, but nobody's getting back to anything. College basketball is completely different than it was. You're not going to have the John Wooden dominance, the Rick Pitinos, the John Calipari's. You're just not. You're going to be good. I mean, like I said, look ahead to like the years 2027, 2028, and 2029. Chances are you're going to have 3 completely different teams those 3 years. So how do you know if you're going to be? You can't build a really dominant run, because players are all going to leave. So I think if you're really good, you'll be in the mix more often than most teams, and more often than not. But you're not building dynasties anymore. I mean, UConn is the exception that proves the rule right now. Paul, what do you think?
No, it's going to be hard to build a dynasty, but you can get healthy very quickly with the portal. Like, everyone complains about it, and I understand, especially if you've been in coaching for decades like you and I have, and the guys that are in it right now, not that they're complaining, but it's a difficult way to earn a living now, but they chose it. But the point is, as bad as you could be 1 year, you could put a roster together for the upcoming season very quickly with 4 or 5 of the right guys. Let's take a look at our buddy Kevin Keats at NC State. He put together a really good roster, had balance. It had his type of player, his type of person. That's why the character part of the evaluation, Bob, is as important as ever. Before, if you took a talented kid and you knew there was some red flags, you would say, oh, well, he's surrounded by a lot of good kids. He'll conform to us. And if not, he'll leave and we'll get somebody else. Well, right now, I mean, you do that, it could be, you know, you could have a bad year really quickly and then another bad year, and ADs are saying, you got the portal, how come you're not winning? So your evaluations have to be spot on by your staff. And I look at Kevin Keats and what he put together. None of us saw the run that he made, but when I went to see him practice in October, I walked away saying, this is a top-half team in the ACC. I like the balance. I like the maturity. Like the size, they had some really good pieces.
How much time are you spending now portaling as opposed to high schooling?
I spent, well, I'd like to go to the pool today, but I can't. But I do go portaling. No, I really don't do much on the portal. I keep track of the top players in the portal. Coaches don't need an evaluation on them because they've seen them for a year in college. Maybe they need some background information. I'm actually spending my time right now, as we speak, our new rankings, our final rankings are coming out for the class of 2024. Okay. They'll be out on Monday. So all the seniors to be, all the freshmen in college, they'll be finally ranked. Then I go into the class of 2025, 26, and yes, 27. Also, the NBA draft information now is starting to, the requests are starting to come in more for that. But for the portal, it's only if they don't know a person as a character type guy, or maybe they're trying to confirm some things they already know.
How about a guy that has a lot of interest in around here, obviously, Boogie Fland?
Yes.
He's got, I mean, I'm reading your tweet, everybody in America has contacted him since he got his release from Kentucky, but according to what you sent out, he's still not, it's not definite that he's not still going to go to Kentucky. They're still on his list, but he's got about 10 or 11 schools on there. What do we know? What's the latest on that?
Yeah, when I spoke to Boogie just the other day, it was, you know, a situation where he's going to open it up because he wants to hear people. He said, look, this time around, it's going to be much more of a straightforward process, meaning, you know, not going to listen to a lot of people. Those are the people that have contacted him. He'll pick a group of 3 to 4 schools to really hone in on, maybe visit. But I asked him point blank, I said, what about NIL? Where does that fit? He goes, it's a factor. It is for all of the players that can, you know, warrant an NIL deal. So, but the relationship with the coach, as you know, and the staff, that's always going to be number one. Whether a coach is at Louisville, Kentucky, Ohio State, they're all great institutions, phenomenal basketball programs. Yes, some have more tradition and history than others. But today, relationship with the coach on how they're going to be utilized, who the play style, who they're going to play with, and what's the NIL situation. Those are the biggest factors right now in recruiting, because the relationship with the coach determines in their mind how they're going to make it to the next level, if they can make it.
Paul Biancardi is with us. He's the recruiting director for ESPN, does the ESPN 100. He's a college basketball and NBA draft analyst. And he's good. Did you just have your camp? You had your camp, didn't you? Or you're going to have it? I thought I saw a picture.
No, I just did. I had 60 kids. That's all I wanted. I had about 15 to 20 high major type prospects. But the best visitor I had, the great Bill Hodges, walked into my camp. I had no idea he was even in town. I don't know why he was in town. And he just walked into the camp. And I immediately stopped and went over because I recognized him. And I introduced him to all the kids. They had no idea who he was. And I told them that, you know, he was Larry Bird's coach at Indiana State.
What do you know, when he left there, what did he do? I often wondered about that. That's so many years ago, and that was obviously the one shining moment in the spotlight for him, and I don't remember hearing about him after that. Do you know what he do?
Yeah, he moved to Florida, really, and he spends a lot of time in Florida, and he spent some time in North Carolina. I think he was visiting a friend, and one of my coaches on the staff, you know, told him we were having a camp, and that's why he came in, because you know how coaches are. If they know there's an event or a camp going on, and they just want to walk in and see the talent and talk to the coaches. And it was just a great, great feeling to see somebody who, you know, was one of the great coaches during his time, you know, and told me a few Larry Bird stories, which was great too.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, it must have been. I looked it up. He went from Indiana State, where he coached through 1982, to then Long Beach State as an assistant for just a year. Then he was the head coach at Georgia College for 5 years, Mercer for 6 years, and he finished his career 1 year on the staff at Murray State, but that was in 1999. So wow. I'm not sure what he's done since then, but nice to see that he's still in there punching, huh? So that's good. So I'm sure he had some interesting stories. That'd be wild, coaching Larry Bird. Who, you know, they're building a Larry Bird Museum. It's kind of weird. I feel bad about that. I don't know if you asked him about that, but they're building a museum to him in where Indiana State is. Why am I Terre Haute? And Larry Evinelli doesn't have anything to do with the school. I don't know why. It's not. I don't know if he's mad about something or what. But he doesn't. You know, he comes back to, I guess, various things for the other organizations he's been with, but not with Terre Haute. And they're, so they're building this museum to him, and I don't think he's got really anything to do with it. It's kind of very strange. Did Hodges tell you? Is there some falling out there that you know about?
No, he didn't mention anything about that. He kind of mentioned when he got drafted by the Celtics and, you know, Dave Collins was going to be his coach, and Dave flew in to see Larry, and they talked about how he'd fit in, right, to the Celtics, and watched some film of Larry from college and told him what a how he'll fit offensively to everything the Celtics are doing, but had a little bit of a concern about him defensively. So it was Larry Bird, Dave Collins, and Bill Hodges. And then Bill finally let Dave finish and say, he said to Dave, he said, look, Dave, he'll understand how to guard guys one-on-one. I said, and I know he's a little slow of foot, but he's fast in his mind, and he'll be one of your best team defenders. And he said that to Dave Collins in 1980, and he was spot on.
He was, yeah. Very cool. Yeah, he had some harder times. He went 33-1 his first year as a head coach. That was a mistake. Should never have done that. But then he was 16-11, 9-18, 9-18, left Indiana State. But then when he went to Georgia College, he had a nice run. He had 3 years where he was 25-9, 25-10, 24-8, and then coached at Mercer and had a couple of winning seasons. But then his last year was just a 3-win season, and that was it. And then he retired from coaching. But yeah, I always thought that would be an interesting guy to talk to, because I mean, he and Indiana State came out of nowhere to make that Final Four run. I mean, it was nobody talked about Indiana State, and nobody had really heard of him. But
and it shows you the power of one player.
Yeah,
I mean, they had other good players. We know that, but the power of one good player. That's why in the portal, you're getting a guy who played college basketball, you know, somewhere else. And a lot of these coaches I talk to, Bob, they're looking at who coached the player previously.
Yeah.
So if it's somebody like he's coming out of Tom Izzo or Tony Bennett or coming from a Bill Self, they really take a hard look at who coached this person, because then they're getting somebody who's going to be a year older and already has some pretty good habits. You just got to figure out, you know, why are they transferring? What's the real reason? Are they trying to grab a bag of money? Or do they really want a new situation?
Yeah.
And that's the toughest part. Coaches wake up every morning trying to figure out who's telling them the truth and who's not.
Absolutely. Hey, brother, it's good to talk to you, my friend. Enjoy your summer. We will pick your brain as it rolls on. And as always, we love talking to you. And again, take a look for that list, the final list coming out. When did you say? Monday? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Monday for the class of 2024.
Beautiful. We'll look forward to it. Thanks, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Bobby.
All right, Paul Biancardi. And that wraps up yet another hour in the books here.
Hooray.
Hooray. I guess this last Bluey show is making people cry.
Yeah, evidently. It's supposed to be
really touching. Very moving. Looking forward to seeing that. Hooray.
Hooray.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. ESPN 680-1057.